This is almost exactly the one-year anniversary of the opening of this facility, and this is a special event. Neil Fried is something of a rock star in Alaska in the field of economics and public speaking. I also have it on good authority that many people believe very strongly that wearing a bow tie implies intelligence and authority. I also have it on very good authority that women find men with bow ties to be exceptionally attractive. I had confirmation of this on campus when I walked by and heard someone say, "Look, even Kohlberg looks better with a bow tie." Imitation is supposed to be a form of flattery, and that's the intention tonight. However, I think if more people did wear bow ties, this would be a better place. I suspect that when Julius Caesar went to the forum and was given a warning by the soothsayer that it was the wrong day to go, he would have listened had that person been wearing a bow tie. If General Custer had been advised moments before he marched into the Little Bighorn by one of his advisors with a bow tie, he might have listened more carefully. We'll have that opportunity tonight to listen to someone with authority and intelligence. This is a very special event for this college. It is something that is sponsored by the North Rim Bank. About 6 years ago, representatives of the bank came to me and asked what they could do to support this college, and we came up with the idea of creating a lecture series on business for this college in the theater that was not yet built. And they have steadily provided funding for this event, which is now an actual second year event for this community, for this college. And one of the purposes of the University of Alaska is to provide a public forum for the communities in which the campuses are located. North Rim Bank has been very generous and has provided so far in excess of $30,000 over the years to provide a basic fund for a continuation of this lecture series in the years to come, which you may not realize it takes a significant amount of money to advertise an event like this. With us tonight is the president of North Rim Bank, Joe Shearhorn, and it is my pleasure to introduce him and thank him for his generous support to this community and to this college. With that, Mr. Shearhorn.
Thank you, Director Tallis. And on behalf of the Wasilla branch team and all of the employees of North Rim Bank, I want to welcome you to the, as Tallis said, the second annual North Rim Bank Lecture Series. We recently celebrated our 25th anniversary in December, and we've come a long way from our humble beginnings in December of 1990. We now have 14 branches that span the state from Fairbanks down to Ketchikan. And we have a great branch here in Wasilla, so you'll meet some of our branch team if you haven't already. And we also have a mortgage subsidiary, Residential Mortgage, that has a similar footprint throughout the state, and also a growing presence here in the Mat-Su Valley. In addition to our loan deposit and electronic banking services, we also can offer wealth management and health insurance products. So we would welcome the opportunity to help you with any of your personal or business banking needs. Tonight, the focus is on the economy. Last year, we heard from Tim Bradner, who spoke about Alaska fiscal issues. This year, Neil Fried will provide information about the Alaska and Mat-Su economies. At North Rim, we believe it's critical to provide accurate, timely information about the economy and fiscal issues facing our state. We focused our charitable giving on education, particularly to the UA campuses and the Institute of Social and Economic Research, otherwise known as ICER, to support its efforts to model and study the economy. At this time, more than ever, we also believe that it's important for all of us to advocate for a balanced plan to address Alaska's fiscal issues that includes using a portion of the earnings from the permanent fund, efforts to make government more efficient, and new revenue sources, which includes taxes on all of us. We believe that the more information that we have on all of these issues, the more involved we all can be in this process. That's why we've given $100,000 each to endow two scholarships at the University of Alaska, one in accounting in honor of the late Chris Knutson, who was our original CFO and our former chief operating officer, and one in leadership in honor of our co-founder, Mark Langland, our former chairman. In addition, as Talis mentioned, over the last 5 years, we've given $5,000 per year to endow this lecture series. Now I'd ask if Talis would come forward with our branch team, and we'd like to present at this time an additional $5,000 to the college to continue this great work that the college is doing in the community here to bring events like this to the community and many more. So, Talis, here's our check for $5,000. Now I'd like to introduce our speaker. Neil Fried has worked as an economist in Alaska for almost 40 years. He came to Alaska in the early 70s and earned degrees in history and economics from University of Alaska Fairbanks, near and dear to my heart as I grew up in Fairbanks. And Neil is the primary author of the Department of Labor's monthly magazine, Alaska Economic Trends. In addition, Neil presents to many groups throughout the state where he provides valuable information about the economy, economic forecasts, wages, employment, many other topics of interest to all of us. We're fortunate to have Neil with us to share his insights on the economy. So please help me in welcoming Neil Fried.
Well, good evening, everyone. I've never been on a stage this large. I feel like I should sing a song, if I were a rich man or something. This is the peak of my career, obviously, by the square footage of this, and I've never seen my slides this large. It's kind of frightening and intimidating. And I didn't realize that they were going to pay me $5,000 to give this presentation. I usually do it for free, and I'm more than happy. I'd actually pay to do this, because this is the very best part of my job. But I really want to thank Talis and the university for doing this, for inviting me here. I was somewhat hesitant when he first asked me, but I gave in gladly, obviously. And I want to thank Joe and Northern Bank for making this possible. And I really want to thank all of you for coming here on a weekday night to listen to an economist. I mean, come on, don't you have better things to do with your lives? But no, it's great. I do spend quite a bit of time up in the Valley. I know many of you have heard me before. I talk to a lot of civic groups, to chambers. I probably come up here 6 or 7 times a year. I write lots and lots of articles on the Matsu Borough. Let me just read a few of the titles of these, and they show up in our monthly magazine, Alaska Economic Trends, that comes out each month. And here are just some of them. And starting in 2000, this was the title of this one, The Matsu Borough, a profile of the fastest growing area in the state. Here's another one, The Matsu Borough, its growth is in a league of its own. You can see how original I am. The Matsu Borough, the Valley's economy is throwing its weight around. That was back in December of 2005. The Matsu Borough, an economic standout. That was in June of 2007. I know it goes on and on and on. The Matsu-Susitna Borough, growth continues to eclipse the rest of the state. And then the last one was the Matsu Borough boom, which I did not put that on there, my editor did. Borough's growth continues to eclipse. I ran out of adjectives. Eclipse the state. In fact, I sent them one last year. Another article on the Matsu Borough, because the Matsu Borough is one of the areas where I specialize in, and they rejected it. They said, Neil, there have been more articles written about the Matsu Borough's economy than any other, and you can't write any more for a while. And that's the first time that actually happened to me. And my argument was that this borough changes so fast that to stay up to date, you sort of have to do this to get the latest data. For much of the rest of the state, that's not true. If it was written 5 years ago, it's still probably pretty good. In fact, I just wrote an article to celebrate the Denali Borough's 25th year of existence as a borough late last year, and you know, just that borough north of here. And I read an article I'd written about the borough 15 years before that, and it had hardly changed. You all know this. You all live in a very, very dynamic place. In fact, I was telling some people earlier today that I was sitting next to a couple of people that were talking on the airplane a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about various things, because most people don't talk at all on airplanes anymore, so I always listen if they do. And in their conversation, they started talking about the Matsu Valley, and the guy, and they neither of them were from here, they're both from Anchorage, said, "I understand that the Matsu borough is going to be larger than Anchorage in 10 years. And I thought, no, that's not going to happen. But I didn't say anything. But so I know things have sometimes gone to your heads. But the title of this presentation was a little bit misleading. And I hate to say that. When I saw the advertisements for this presentation, I thought, who came up with that? That's really pretty good marketing. And that's happened to me before. I thought Talis had fooled around with it. And then I went back to my emails and realized I had come up with it. Surprising. Because I want to tell you right now is most of what I'm going to talk about today is about the Matsu Valley's economy. Many of you are going to be familiar with a fair amount of material, although I got more than usual. I am going to talk about the future somewhat, but I don't have an official forecast. I am hopefully going to arm you with enough information you can come up with your own forecast, because these times are different. There's no doubt about it. But I will be talking about Anchorage's economy and the statewide economy, because that's so important when we talk about the Matsu Valley's economy. My presentation is sort of split up into three pieces. One, I'm going to talk about sort of your job market and industries. Then I'm going to talk about housing, because it's so important here, because you are an exporter of housing. It's not that you put houses on trucks or trains and ship them off somewhere, although you do some of that. It's different. And then my third piece is going to be about population and demographic trends. And then that last, it's sort of three and a half pieces. The last piece is going to talk about sort of what's going on now, some of the challenges, and something about forecasts in the future. Normally, I like it when people interrupt me. I like a rude audience, and maybe I shouldn't encourage you here. And I just have people, call out questions or wherever my presentation, whenever, all during my presentation, whether it's germane to the topic or not, I don't really care. I thought with this, because there are this many people here, usually I don't talk to this many people, is that every time I get done with a third of my presentation, like when I get done with the labor, I'll ask if there are any questions or comments. Because I don't want things to get lost. I don't want people to forget questions at the end. We will have a Q&A section at the end as well, just to cover all bases. Does that make sense? It would be much more fun if this does become, more interactive than me just standing up here with my big, beautiful, giant slides it's still worrisome. I don't know how it even got there. And these are just some of the art. You can see some of the covers. And you can see, let's dive into it. Have I forgotten anything? Any other preambles? No, probably have. This here is your basic history, your economic history, all in one slide going back to statehood. And, I could talk about this slide for hours, but I'm not. There's two things I want you to just notice on this slide, and many of you have seen this, I just add a new one on every year, is really the steepness of this curve on this slide. This is the valley, employment that exists here in the Matsu Valley, that physically exists in the borough, and then this is statewide. what's happened statewide, which has also grown, but you can see is much flatter, is not nearly as steep as this. Now, you know, one of the sort of amazing things that has been a sort of phenomena of Alaska and the Mattsu Valley is that we've been basically growing uninterruptedly since 1988. It wasn't 89 with the oil spill, but actually started growing before that, after our Great Recession, and have really not stopped ever since then. So from a historical standpoint, if you just were going to forecast what was going to happen the next year, all you had to do for most years is look at what happened the previous year and just tell people that's what your forecast for 2013, 14, and 15 were. And you got it. You didn't have to be brilliant or have any special insight. You're usually right. I don't think that this trend here is necessarily a roadmap to our future, at least for the next 2 or 3 years. I think we may not be able to, it won't be that easy to forecast the future of our economies in the future. Do I want to say anything else about this? No. This here is just sort of a comparison between the growth rates, employment growth of Anchorage and the growth rate of the Mattsu Valley. All this is saying is that employment in Anchorage grew by 0.4% last year, and the valleys grew by 2%. If you look at the last 3 years, Anchorage basically flatlined, hardly grew at all, while the Mattsu Valley experienced pretty significant growth, continued to grow. And that's sort of going to be a theme that we're going to see a lot of tonight. This here is what I sort of like. Instead of just looking at what happened in the last year, I like to look at what has happened over the longer run. Again, these are jobs that physically exist here in the Mattsu Borough. In other words, what this is saying is that manufacturing employment grew by 93%, and in absolute jobs, they added 205 new jobs. Or in healthcare, which was the big winner here, grew not only on a percent basis very rapidly, but also from a numeric sense. And you all know this. You've seen this. You've seen these new hospitals, these new clinics, and everything as our population ages. And of course, the other thing that added fuel to your growth in healthcare is you were providing more and more of your services locally instead of having those get those services in Anchorage or somewhere else in the country. And you just look down this list. I think there's some surprises. Here's retail, and everyone pays attention to the new stores and shops and those kinds of things. But when you really look at it, it did not grow that much in the last 10 years, either statewide or in the Mattsu Valley, because it's a big industry because it grew so much in the 90s. An interesting one is leisure and hospitality. That's your bars, your restaurants, and your hotels, growing a lot. The restaurant thing, you know, you think you've gotten enough of them. We don't seem to be able to get enough of those. You know, we spend half of our food dollar now away from home. And the Valley is no exception to that. In fact, I was talking to someone about the Panda Express, which I've never been in before. I'd never even heard of them before. And you know, there's one in Anchorage and there's one in the Mattsu Valley. They say, and they say this with, you know, they always say this about stores, that it's always the number one. That's usually not true. But in this case, the person said, yes, is it indeed true? Number one was Anchorage in the world, and the Valley was number two. And I said that to some people in the Valley, and they said, yeah, you bet. They obviously experienced it. And you just look up. There's government. That's federal, state, and local government. Includes the university. The biggest piece of that here in the Mattsu Valley is your school district. School district is the largest single employer in the Mattsu Valley, and that's true in most places. Okay. I'm going to ask, are there any questions about this? Because this is really important. Any questions about this? Because I know these titles aren't always, you know, very descriptive. Yes?
You and your 23,000 job slide, couple slides back.
Uh-huh. I knew you'd give me trouble. No. In both of those graphs, and I'm glad you asked that question, and you know the answer to it, I think. These numbers, I'm glad you pointed it out. This is the great thing about interaction. That is wage and salary employment. Those are jobs that people got a paycheck for. So it excludes two groups of people. It excludes the self-employed, which about 10% of Valley residents, but residents that live and work in the Valley, about 10% of them are self-employed. Their growth rate has probably been similar to the overall growth rate of the labor market. That's really the only group that is excluded from those numbers. For jobs that physically, again, and it's real important in the Valley to remember this, these are jobs that physically exist within the boundaries of the Mat-Su borough. Because in the Valley's case, it's a very important distinction. In most places, it's not. Any other questions about this one? The red number indicates the absolute number of new jobs in that industry in the last decade. So in other words, that 205 for manufacturing means that there's 205 more jobs in manufacturing in the Mat-Su Valley today than there were back in 2005. Does that make sense? And then there's the percent growth, because percent growths and absolute numbers can be so different. That's why I like to have both of them. Yes. And those jobs may show up here. Let me say about mining is exploration for mining. Their numbers usually show up in a different parts of this. A lot of them show up in professional business services where engineering is. Some of them show up in construction. And when the mine is opened, that's when we start counting them in the mining industry itself. Yes. I don't know. I mean, obviously, most of it would be in the Palmer-Wasilla area, just like population is. But I take the macro look of the Valley. I am not very good about the separate parts of the Valley, the different geographies within the Mat-Su borough. But that's what my guess would be, where most of the population is. This is great. Any other questions about this? All right, let me move on to the next slide, because this might help explain. This gives proportionality. This is where the jobs are in the Mat-Su Valley. In other words, what this is saying is 10% of the people that work in the Mat-Su Valley are entrepreneurs, people that work for themselves, or 15% work in retail, or 11% work in healthcare. That's all this is saying. It's just describing where you're, and you know, if I was in Anchorage talking about their economy, or Kenai, or somewhere else, or the state, this is the only slide I would show people when I was talking about employment. But I can't do that in the Mat-Su Valley, because that only tells part of the story. This describes part of your standard of living. This describes part of your economy, but only a part. And it's a significant part, but depending on how you look at it, in some cases, it's not even half of your economy, which is really unusual. Any questions about this one? Because that one worked really well. I think I've described pretty much. Let me make sure that these are all pretty obvious. Yeah, they are. Now, some of you may be wondering where the heck you are. If you are, just let me know. I'll tell you where you belong. That sounded kind of threatening. No, I didn't mean it that way. But this is where these are the... This is where Mat-Su residents work, and that's why this other pie only describes part of the Valley, and some of these jobs actually are held by Anchorage residents that drive to the Valley every day to work. Now, this one describes where Valley residents work, only Valley residents. In other words, 55% of Valley residents that have a job are... work right here in the Mat-Su Valley. And before this man over here asked me who's excluded from this, because there is an important exclusion in this one, it excludes the federal government. Because the federal government, even though they pay us to collect most of this data, won't give us their data. And the other one's the military. They won't give us hardly anything. And I know that there are, 2,000 to 3,000 people in the military that work in J-Bear, that live here in the Matsu Valley. Those are the uniformed folks, along with their dependents, which makes that population significantly bigger. And there are lots of federal employees that either work here in the Valley or commute to Anchorage. Those two groups are excluded along with the self-employed. This probably represents about 80%, but it gives you an idea. What's interesting is, 30% commute to Anchorage, and the other big slice and very dynamic slice of the pie has been the North Slope. And we're going to talk about that a lot more. Any questions about this? And let me say one other thing, is that the 45% brings more earnings into the Valley's economy than that 55%. Does that make sense? Considerably more. In fact, the last time I looked, the North Slope alone, that 9%, the earnings of that 9% brought in represented almost half of that 55%. Pretty amazing. Just remember that when we talk a little bit about the future. Yes, there was a can somewhere over here. I'm like an auctioneer, I can see it. Yes. Let's go right to that. I asked her to ask this question. She's a plant. No, it's not. She is not a plant. And that's a very good question. 10 years ago, people used to ask me in the Valley, or 15 years ago, do you think that number is going to decline or change? Or decline, actually. And I would say, in my self-assured way, yeah, I think it will. I think it will. And it that part has. I was right about that. The percent of commuters has not changed, and we'll look at that. Let's go to that first. This is the number of people that live in the Valley and work in the Valley. You can see, the beauty of this graph is it's so boring. It's basically saying, no, it has not changed very much. And I'm surprised. Because you would think that as an economy grows, especially yours, that's growing faster than everyone else's, that proportionately a larger and larger percent of Valley residents would work in the Valley. But that has not been the way it's worked out. But here's some interesting detail about that. The percent that come to Anchorage has declined. That's that blue line. See, it started at about 33% back in 2004. If you can read it, it's a complicated weirdo graph. But it's dropped to about 30% now. So who's made up the difference? Well, it's this North Slope for most part. That has kept the overall quite similar. Yes? Yes, we are. We already have begun to see that. And I'll talk about that more. Yes. But that's definitely a trend. And we talk about it, maybe I'll bring you up here and have you tell me what you think is going to happen. No, don't worry. Don't worry. I don't want to discourage any questions. But yes. Okay. This is where the earnings are. And anyone who's seen me present before has seen this. This is average earnings. It's just taking total payroll and dividing it by total number of jobs. Very simplistic. And it's problematic, because it's average. Averages always have problems. But it tells a story. The blue is where the average construction payroll job in the Valley pays about $66,000 a year. Average earnings, annual earnings. That doesn't mean individuals get it. Some get a lot more than that, some get a lot less. Our government's 48. The average for the Matsu borough is 40,000. The average for Anchorage is 55, and of course you can see the slope. That sort of encourages people, in some sense, to migrate or to commute for higher earnings. Now, most of this difference is explained not because that same job in Anchorage pays more than the same job in the Matsu Valley. That's not the case, although there is a slight premium paid in Anchorage over the Matsu Valley. Or I should say there's an under premium paid here because it's easier to attract workers here because you're already here. Whereas in Anchorage, it's a little more difficult. But the biggest difference that explains this is that we just have a different a mix of jobs in Anchorage. There are no oil industry job, physical oil industry jobs in the Matsu Borough. There are a lot of them in Anchorage. So people commute for those. We have more federal jobs. We have more headquarter jobs. So that's why that happens. Are there any questions about this? These are just very rough numbers, but do explain some of those patterns out there in your economy. Yes. No, I understand that. And you're right. And we make lots of people angry because we don't. I mean, we do. It's just, I can't, that's already overwhelming as far as I'm concerned, the amount of information on that slide. But I do have that information for the university and for local education and for, because federal, state, and local are very different, are very, very different, their earnings and wages. For example, the federal government's average earnings are the third highest in the state after oil, mining, and the federal government. Now, when I started working out, state and local was higher than federal government, and I did work for the federal government for 3 months. Maybe I should have stayed there, because now they pay a lot more. You can feel, hear some resentment in my voice. But yes, I mean, it does make a difference. We do have those. I just don't, you know, it's just too much detail. Yes. No, no. Now, some of my numbers will represent retirement, but this is all employment related. All employment related. And that's a very valid question. This does represent retirement. This represents not just retirement by any means. This represents all sources of income that come to individuals in the Matsu Borough and in Alaska and other places. And this is just the median household income in the Matsu Borough compared to other places. And what median is that half the people have incomes higher than this and half of them have incomes lower than this. And it's a pretty nice number. You know, even if you adjust this for the cost of living, the Matsu Borough does pretty well when you compare yourselves to the rest of the country. And this is income coming from everywhere. It's not just jobs in the Slope, jobs in Anchorage, jobs in the Valley, but it's Social Security. Profit, you know, if you own a rental and you're making profits on that and becomes income, it theoretically includes all sorts of income instead of, except for maybe that underground income that might exist. I'm not, you know, that's usually not declared, and this isn't even necessarily declared income because it's a survey, but it's, and you know, the other beauty of these numbers, in a sense, is, you know, we have the most, Alaska has the second most evenly distributed income in the country. So this is a nice representation of, you know, right now we look pretty good when it comes to income. The PFD is in here, obviously, as well, dividends and things like that. Any questions about this? All right. We've already, yes. The slide here. It's any household. To be a household, you have to have more than one person, and that becomes a household if the two people are related. So that's how a household is defined. It's not defined by size, because I can also have per capita income, and that would be income for every man, woman, and child, or I can have family income, I'm totally wrong here. Median household income can be any size. If you're a single person living by yourself, you are considered a household. Or if there are five of you living together, then you're also a household. Now, if I had family income up here, it would be significantly higher than this, because in Alaska, all members of a family receive income if you're a resident. And obviously, if you're a two-wage earner family, that makes a big difference, or you're receiving two retirement checks, or two Social Security, you know, that kind of thing. So household is just goes from one person to whatever the size is. It's just a nice way of separating it. Here is, I'm just throwing this in to give you proportionality, because this is going to be important when we talk later. This is sort of the amazing story that a lot of people have, and that 2014 number, I know some of you think that looks old. I just got that last week. Because how do I generate this number? Now, I can tell you how many people are working in the oil industry in January on next Friday. But this is what this data does, is how do I know how many people in the Mat-Su Valley work in the oil fields? Well, I can match their PFD check with their paycheck. That's, you know, they can't do that anywhere else in the country. But the PFD gives us this ability to collect a lot of other information. So this is how we know how many Mat-Su residents work up on the slope. And the most amazing part of this is that look at how much it has grown. Look at how much it just grew between 2013 and 14. And when the 15 numbers come out, it's going to be at least that large or maybe even a little higher. But look at that. That is more than, that's almost a tripling of employment of Mat-Su residents on the North Slope. Statewide, it's about doubled, but it tripled here. The Mat-Su Valley supplies the second largest group of people that work in the North Slope in Alaska. Anchorage is number one, and then the valley is just close behind. Anchorage is 4,000-something, and then you. And then the Kenai Peninsula after that. This has been, this is a very significant recent trend. If someone had asked me 10 years ago, oh, Neil, three times as many people are going to be working on a slope as today, I would have never believed them. And in a valley, it's much more likely that you have a neighbor that works on a North Slope than anywhere else in the state. Anywhere else. Unless you're working in Prudhoe itself. But that's not a neighborhood, really. For a few people, it is. Any questions? I'm done with talking about employment right now, and I'm going to move on to housing. Any questions about the employment part of it? I told you I was going to split this up in three pieces, but it's already been split up into 12. Yes. You know, we could do that, but we have not. But we could possibly do that as long as they were in the state. And we've done some really phenomenal things to be able to follow people or people who are just graduate from, like, you know, a two-year program or apprenticeship. Where do they end up? They have higher earnings now than before, those kinds of things. So we could, but I don't have that kind of information. Now I'm going to move to the housing portion of my presentation. And, you know, again, when I talk about housing in Anchorage, and I give a lot of presentations in the Anchorage economy because my two areas are the Mat-Su Borough and Anchorage, I don't talk about housing hardly at all because it's not an economic generator. In Anchorage, housing is largely just a place for people to live. The housing is going to be there no matter what to a certain extent. But you, in a sense, export housing to the rest of the state. I know that sounds pretty strange, but you do, and maybe it'll make more sense when I get done if it doesn't sound strange. And this is just an indication of what this means. In 2004, and I just noticed this a year ago, in 2000, maybe some of you knew this beforehand, starting in 2004, more homes, housing units, not just homes, but housing units, because a duplex is two, a fourplex is four, a single family is one, an apartment building of 20 is 20. So it's number of units. In 2004, or ever since 2004, more new housing units have been built in the Mat-Su Valley, an absolute number, than anywhere else in the state. Now, that's a pretty big statement. You have a I know some of you think you're as big as Anchorage already. Well, sorry, you're not. There are 100,000 of you and 300,000 of them. But in absolute terms, you're building more homes than they are or anywhere else in a state by a long shot. Let's look at some other numbers. For every year since 2004, I love this one. I just came up with it a year or two ago. You basically, how you know, 30, and 14 is the latest year. You know, if you had building permits in the Mat-Su Valley, everywhere, I would have 2015 data. But I still have my drones up there counting all the new ones. No, that's not true. But it takes us longer to get new housing units in the Mat-Su than other places. So I have 14. But 15 won't be much different. Which numbers? How many new housing units? From the Matsu Borough's assessor's office. Pretty good source. Probably better than ours. And you know what's amazing is that, you know, you have, you know, 14% of the state's population, but are building 37% of all new housing units. And that's been true for quite a while. I mean, it's pretty amazing. This, of course, is, you know, one of the explanations for that. Just one of them. I think there are lots of other things going on. But this is, you know, you have that $100,000 advantage, but it's not just a $100,000 advantage over Anchorage. You also have just very competitive housing because not everyone wants to live. I mean, a lot of people who move to the Valley don't want anything to do with Anchorage. They've never lived in Anchorage. Maybe they got a job in the Slope. They wanted to stay in the state, and so they're living here. Or maybe they're fishing in Bristol Bay. Or maybe they're mining, you know, up in Delta. But they've chosen the Valley, where they're going to live here in the Valley, partially because of your competitive housing. Although I have to say that if we do build a bridge to Kenai, you might have some competition. And these are just averages. They're dangerous, but they tell you a lot. Here's sort of an interesting one. This is the ratio of the cost of housing in the Valley relative to Anchorage over time. I found that this really interesting. Now, in the Anchorage, everyone says, you know, we don't have any land left, we can't build any housing. I totally disagree with that. I was just in Seattle. They're building more new housing units in Seattle today than they ever have in their history. And everyone claims Seattle was overbuilt, you know, 50 years ago. Our housing is going to be different now in the future in Anchorage. It's going up this way because it can't go out that way. So you do have an advantage. But look at this. The ratio has not changed that much. I would have thought it would have increased more dramatically over the last decade, and it hasn't changed very much. Interestingly, I don't know what was happening here. And what's interesting is back in the late 80s, housing was even, that the ratio was even that much higher. In other words, the average house in the Matsu was half the price of an average house in Anchorage. Now, the way anyone tell me how they would interpret that, I think there's a very interesting thing. I thought about it for a while. What was happening in the late 80s with housing? That's right. We were recovering. We had lots of housing, excess housing all over, well, most parts of the state. And so the deals in the Valley were even better back then than they are today from a relative standpoint. But I thought this was interesting that this has not changed that much. This is what's sort of fascinating to me, and I don't know if you appreciate this, but the age of your housing is totally different than the states or Anchorage's. Way, way much younger. I mean, over half of your housing has been built since 1990. Over a third of your housing has been built since the year 2000, which most of you in this audience can remember. Now, most of you can remember 1990 as well. In fact, most of you can probably remember 1980, and some of you in the 70s and 50s. But you know, your housing stock is of a way different vintage than anywhere else in Alaska. Much younger, much, much younger. I mean, look at that, 15% versus 35%, or 18% versus 35%. Very different because of that growth. Here's just a fun graph, or a weird one. This is all about affordability. And what's interesting, you know, from a historical standpoint, people don't want to believe this, but housing is quite affordable right now. When you look at earnings and the cost of housing, it's actually quite affordable. But this is looking at how many average paychecks in that area does it take to afford an average home. And you can see what this says. In Juneau, it takes 1.5 Juneau paychecks to afford that average home in Juneau. And Juneau has some of the highest cost housing in the state. I think Anchorage is now number one and Juneau's number two in absolute terms. Here's a Matsu is 1.4, and that probably surprises you. Why? It's because if you take the average paycheck paid in the Matsu Valley, it does take 1.4 Matsu Valley paychecks to afford the average house. But that's not normally what is occurring in the Matsu Valley. Here, lots of workers that live in the Matsu Valley work somewhere else. And let's say they're working in Anchorage, then it only takes 1.1 paychecks to buy that average home, single family home in the Matsu Valley. Any questions about this? This is just a real sort of general average kind of thing, but just sort of a kind of a fun thing. Okay, this is just for grins. Those of you who didn't buy housing back in the 80s, sorry, you missed the boat. I mean, look at that. If you take that house in 1988 and adjust it for inflation, it should only cost $124,000 now. And of course, it really costs $248,000. Or if you bought a housing, you know, back then, you made a darn good investment any time in those years. This is just the cost of housing adjusted for inflation. Housing costs have gone up significantly faster than inflation. Have been a very good investment in the Matsu Valley. This is the last slide on housing I think I have. No, it isn't. As our economy becomes more challenging, we keep on looking for cracks in our economy. And housing is one you think will react fast. Well, look at 2015. You sold more houses. More homes were sold in the Valley in 2015 than any previous year in the last decade, and have been growing. Yes. Probably, yes. Earnings were quite high, and income were quite high into the 80s. We lost a lot of ground in the 90s, and then we regained some of that ground in the 2000s. This here is foreclosures. That's the 80s, the good old 80s. It looks like the national recession. And this, you know, actually foreclosures in the Matsu Valley and the state fell last year. Okay. This here, I'm going into my third part of my presentation, and this is population. This one's a fascinating one. This is, K through 12 school enrollment. Or school population. And you know, this is where you folks have been way out in left field and none of the rest of us can understand what's going on here. Why the heck are they building all these new schools? No one else is. The schools we build in Anchorage are just replacement schools. We have to burn them down to get a new school. No, that's not true. but it's not because our student population is, it hasn't grown at all. And that's not a bad thing necessarily. You know, a lot of people get paranoid and upset when their school population, they think it's a reflection on their economy. Not necessarily. It could just be a demographic thing. But when you look at the difference in the experience, it is amazing. While the state's student population has basically not grown at all in the last 15 years, yours grew by 42%. If you took the absolute numbers, you have over 5,000 more kids going to school in the Valley today than you did back in 2000. That would make you the fourth, that just addition would make you the fourth largest school district in the state after Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Kenai. You are the second largest school district in the state, but just that growth would have put you in fourth place, minus everyone that was already going to school here. Makes sense? It's too bad we haven't built schools on wheels around the state. We could have just wheeled them up here. Yes. Well, one thing we know, obviously, as far as money for schools go, a very large share of that has been coming to the Valley. That doesn't mean that other schools haven't been built, new schools in other places, because they have, or additions. That's what generally happens, for example, in Anchorage. We get lots of additions. My children go to the only school in Anchorage, or did, that has still not gotten a new addition. I don't know what proportionally what those numbers are, but I would suspect, and it would make sense, that you would have gotten a disproportionate amount of the new construction dollars for schools for the state. I don't know if you'd be more vulnerable than anywhere else. I mean, you have a much bigger school district in that sense than you did But, you know, from an absolute standpoint, I would suspect school districts will feel the pain. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't guess what they're going to do. But that I don't know if that necessarily means that. But you do have a much bigger population that's tied to schools, a much bigger proportion of your population. You shouldn't be saying that. I had this graph and I didn't have it. And you know, there are people in Anchorage that think that. And that's not true. We're just as fertile as you. In fact, I have the number in my head. Your birth rate, the number of new addition, natural increase in the last 10 years or 15, don't quote me on this, yours was like 4,000 and Anchorage was like 12. Without our natural increase, our population wouldn't have grown at all. You got growth in more than just have, involved in that activity. So no. Since you brought it up, I thought I would, but. You all know this. I don't want to spend much time with this. You've seen these numbers. The red numbers are just the absolute number. In other words, in Knik Fairview, there are 17,000 people. These are the growth rates. You can see you've been growing at, five times the speed of Anchorage and way faster than the rest of the state. You are an outlier. You know that. I've been saying that all evening. And you can see what parts of the borough have grown faster than others. Yes. Not really. I'm going to talk a little bit of migration, and that will give you some feel for that. This here just tells you how much things have changed. Those people on the airplane weren't completely wrong, but they were larger. But, look at that. In 1990, you only represented 14% of that overall combined population, and now it's 25. That's pretty impressive because we're dealing with pretty large numbers. This is the growth rates, the annual growth rates around the state. In other words, the state's been growing about 0.7% since 2010. You've grown about 2%. And what's interesting is America or the rest of the country has grown slightly faster than Alaska, which is pretty unusual. And you can compare other parts of the state and how they're growing. This here is something that you're probably unhappy about. Look at that. There are now twice as many per square mile here in the valley compared to what there was back in 1990. You have now 4 people per square mile, God forbid, versus 1.6, while we have 152 per square mile. A little difference. Of course, this is slightly disingenuous because a lot of the folks live in a core area. So obviously in a core area, the per square mile counts are larger than that. These are just some more population numbers. All this says is there are 1,800 more people living in the Matsu Valley in 2015 than there were in 14. And what happened this year? What was the most significant thing that happened in the valley in 2015 when we're talking about population? Yes, you broke 100,000, that 100,000 number. This is the same graph for Alaska, the whole state. Look at this. This doesn't make any sense. You grew by 1,800, and the state grew by 270. So where did the others go? I don't get it. It's because there was negative out-migration in Alaska. This was the only place that gained more people then people left. More people moved in than left was the Matsu Valley. Look at that. The last 2 years, your absolute growth last year was more than the absolute growth in Alaska for in 1 year that it took 2 years in Alaska. Very, very different. And in fact, these 2 years for Anchorage were negative. We dropped below 300,000, we lost population both years, the last 2 years. But even though you have been growing like much faster in outliers, your growth rate has slowed down considerably. 2% a year is a lot different than 4%. You add 4% over 10 years, it's a lot different than 2 years. And that growth rate is very likely to continue to slow down. This here is just some trivia. This gives you the number of people that move from Anchorage to the Valley every year. In other words, this last year, about 1,200 or 1,300 people moved net to the Valley from Anchorage. Now, again, you have to remember that all you're gaining population is not just births and people moving from Anchorage. You do have a few deaths, too, by the way. Both of those are growing industries. That mushy mortician knows exactly what he's doing. Great marketing. But I'm losing my train of thought. Here, let's go to this one. This is pretty cool. We can do this now. We can do this because of permanent fund dividends. We can tell you where people came and went within the state every year. We can follow around their PFD check. And look at this. What this is saying is that in between 14 and 15, 3,000 people from Anchorage moved to the Matsu Valley. And I know you don't believe this, but actually about 1,800 moved from the Valley to Anchorage. That does happen sometimes. But you can see the net gain that you get every year from Anchorage. It's quite the difference between those two numbers is that number. Make sense? And look at that. You're gaining in almost every jurisdiction in the state. The only exception is they seem to like Kenai better than you. Well, the numbers are pretty darn close. 276 people moved from the Kenai to the Valley, and about the same number moved from the Valley to Kenai. This is a really interesting one and might be very significant when we talk about our challenges in the future and the challenges we're about to face in Alaska and in the Valley and in Anchorage and in all over the state. This is what our population looked like, your population looked like in 1985. This is a population pyramid. They're very weird, but they're very illustrative. I don't like to use them that much, but this tells a big story. This is age, you see, the 0 to 80. And that's the distribution. So who are all these people? A lot of you out here were those people. You're just a lot older now. Those were the baby boomers back in 85 that dominated and oppressed everybody and listened to all that bad music that's still around. And then you had a lot of younger people, little people, down here, not much in between, and very few seniors. Look at what you look like now. Way, way different. All those darn millennials, look at them. There's as many of them as there are us. And a much more evenly distributed population, probably a much more stable population, maybe. At least that's what it feels like. And look at the senior population. 10% now, not 4%. And what's interesting, I was looking at the absolute numbers. There are more 80-plus year olds in the Valley today than there were seniors in 1985. So very different. I mean, I remember when I used to get off the airplane in Seattle, I thought, there's something really different here in the 80s. You never saw gray hair until you got down there. That has changed. As well, and I think could be a very significant thing. Anyone have any questions about population? Because now I'm about to finish my last little piece. Yes?
So the 1,200 or 1,300 moved from Anchorage to the Valley. Do we have any data on why?
No. 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 We really don't know. You know, retirees, we could, you know, if we looked at it, we could probably tell if there was some of that going on, because we can look at age. So we could maybe look at that, but other than that, no. I mean, we'd have to have a survey, and then everyone would just lie to us anyhow. So, no, I didn't say that. But I don't really know why. We can only conjecture and guess why people. There's obviously some reasons why that happens. This here is what I think of forecasts. They're very problematic. You know, people used to like to insult me, and it was in a kidding way. They'd say, oh, Neil Fried's about to speak to us, and his forecasts are about as good as a weather person's forecasts. That was an insult. They don't say that anymore, because the weather forecasts have gotten so good. If they said that now, I would love it. You know, they got those supercomputers. They have all that historical data that really helps them forecast the future. That doesn't help us much at all. Supercomputers haven't made it better for us. We still are almost as clueless about the future as we ever were. So it's very dangerous territory. You know, a lot of people think that's all I do is forecast. I spend hardly any time forecasting the future. I spend most of my time just counting how many people are employed right now. What are their incomes? You know, where do they go? That kind of thing. This was just a fun one where someone was forecast, like those people on the airplane, that we were going to have 30 million by 2008. Now I'm going to just throw some numbers at you, because we all know the big challenge right now in our economy is because of low oil prices. It used to be because of production. We've forgotten about that one, although that's very real. But it's oil prices that has two consequences, big consequences, the unknown consequences to a degree, but known to a degree as well. One is how is the oil industry going to react to these low oil prices? We've seen this happen before. We know it's going to have an effect. The question is, how long is this low oil price going to stay with us? I have absolutely no idea. How low is it going to go? And how is the oil industry going to react? I know sort of how they are, but I don't know to what degree. But it's already happening in this country. You can see oil industry employment nationally, this is in the thousands, has dropped down to 2012 levels already. Or if we look at the different states, oil-producing states, this is what has happened to oil and gas employment. Ours hasn't fallen as hard, but it's beginning to fall. We have forecasts that the oil industry would lose about 1,000 jobs in 2016 statewide. I think that's maybe a conservative forecast. In fact, someone saw these slides and said, sent us an email, they were from the Matsu Valley, and said, oh, so Neil, what impact is it you're gonna have when we lose 2,000 or 3,000 of our oil industry jobs? And I said, you're not gonna lose 2,000 or 3,000 of your oil industry jobs. You are gonna lose jobs. You are gonna lose oil industry job residents here. How many, I don't know. I don't think it's gonna be that much, that as many as that. But we don't know. This is the other concern. And the other concern we have with the whole oil thing is the fiscal problem that we have. It's already having an effect. There are already 1,300 fewer state, and this includes university, employees than there were a year ago. And that's just going to accelerate. And the capital budget has been cut. That's going to continue. We're going to continue to see that. What exactly is going to happen? I have absolutely no idea. You know, we'll have some better feel in May or June, but that's a tough thing to forecast. The other concern I have about South Central's economy, including the Matsu boroughs, is this. You know, J-Bear, they had that announcement a couple of years ago that they're going to cut J-Bear's numbers by about 2,500. This is uniformed military. There are about 2,000 to 3,000 uniformed military from J-Bear that live here in the valley. Well, you can see their numbers have already begun falling without that announcement. So this is another sort of concern that I have that is going to have direct impacts on the Vats Valley. So, you know, the challenge is going to be pretty big. I just thought I'd throw some numbers up here, and I'm not trying to freak you out here. That's not the point. We just wrote an article because everyone started, you know, I hadn't heard anyone whispering about the 1980s for the last 15 or 20 years, even though I was an economist during that period. It was trauma, economic trauma during that period. Maybe we wanted to forget it or just far enough behind. But it's creeping in again. And in fact, we just wrote an article about it. It said we decided to face it head on. The 1980s recession, are we in a similar position today? And the answer is we don't know. I think things are very different. Does that mean it's going to be easier? No, not necessarily, but be different. But just as an exercise, I thought I would show some numbers. This is not what I am forecasting. This is what happened back in the 1980s. Between 1985 and 1988, the state lost about 16,000 jobs. And you can see the valley lost 900. But on a percent basis, you know, you got hit pretty hard. Now, if we were to say that's going to happen again, And that's not what I'm saying, but just as an academic exercise, if that were to happen in those same proportions today as they did back in the 1980s, this is what it would look like. And then very often what comes up is population. The biggest population loss that we ever experienced in our history was in the 1980s. And let me say this, that when we looked at employment in 1988, which was the end of our recession, and when we looked at population, we still had a lot more employment then, after we had all these losses, than we had prior to the boom that we experienced. So we still had a considerably bigger economy after this. But this is what population we would lose if we lost it to the same degree as we did back in 1985. Again, or 86 and 87 and 88. This is more of an academic exercise just to give you an idea of proportionality. And this is one of my last slides, and that is we do forecast some areas of the state, and there is one sort of consistent story. Some of you may have read through the paper today about a recession. We're debating about whether we're in a recession right now or not. We say we're not, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to go into one. But everyone that's made a forecast is forecasting job losses in Alaska and in, you know, pretty much most parts of the state. A little bit different, but it's pretty consistent. It is possible that we're all wrong and that they're all wrong. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think they will be. Now, the percents, who knows? That's where the really detail is. And then my last slide, on a different note, I know I couldn't quit end my presentation without this, the pickup index, which you've been very, this is the one indicator that you've done very poorly in, Matsubara. You've become less and less Alaskan. It's kind of amazing that for 3 years, the number of registered pickups fell in the Matsu Valley. Now, for a while there, I thought it's because Anchorage got rid of the IM test, and all those illegally registered pickups in the valley are disappearing. But when it went on for 3 years, I'm going, whoa, this is too weird. This is too strange. I don't even know what the reason is. Some people said maybe oil pardon? That moved up here? Oh, but the Californians that moved up to the valley, they want to be just like the valley residents. They want to own a pickup. In fact, I was on a tour in Seattle. You shouldn't have said this. A walking tour, and there was a young British woman on this walking tour, and she had just traveled through the West, and she said to the tour guide, are pickups illegal in Seattle? I thought, wow, that's a really interesting observation. I claim that Alaska has more pickups per capita than any other state in the country. I'm kind of making that up, but not really. And we're in the top five for sure. And I want to say you've redeemed yourself a little bit, because it did grow this last year again. And while everywhere else in the state, it's been growing all those years. So you have fallen behind. You have some ground to make up. Is it important? Absolutely not. Does it matter? Absolutely not. I just thought it was a useful piece of trivia. I am done now. Are any other questions or comments or anything else? The beer slide. I retired the beer slide. Well, you mean the marijuana slide? No. I did write an article about all the growth in craft breweries, and that's been very significant here in the Valley recently, so I do consider myself the beer economic expert in the state, although Dr. Fermento is obviously the beer expert, the guy that has that weekly column in the Anchorage Press. So if you have questions about beer, but we are very good consumers. We are in the top five for craft breweries. I have looked at marijuana. I really don't know. I when I prepared my forecast this year, I looked at it. I called up Colorado, my colleagues in Oregon, Colorado, and Washington, and asked them, how many people are employed in your industry? They couldn't tell me. which was shameful. I will tell you next year, I will get that number for Alaska. Other questions? No. Well, how many of you in this room do have pickups? So you must not register your pickups, right? I mean.
So every time the concept of a state income tax comes up, people talk about the number of non-Alaskans.
Right. You know, that's an interesting question. How many non-residents work in Alaska? And we just came out with our report last week. And I just happened to be reading it, and I think I remember the number right, although I might be wrong, because my memory's lousy. And I don't usually spend a lot of time with that, but I was looking at it. And it's very detailed. It's by industry, by geographic area, et cetera. And the Valley has some of the fewest numbers of non-residents. I believe it was about 21% of our workforce that receives a paycheck were non-residents. 35% of our oil workforce are non-residents. Over 70% of our fish processing workforce and harvesters, and over half of them were non-residents. I mean, we have that detailed. Now, earnings are slightly lower than that. The average earnings for an Alaska resident are somewhat higher than the average earnings. So the earning part of it's going to be something, I can't remember what that number is, I can get it for you, something shy of 21%. Yes? How doomed are you? Because people like me won't get out of the way? Yeah, no, I understand that. Oh, the training. I can't talk to that. That's public policy, and I stay away from public policy. Maybe Joe can talk about that. But I can say this. It's an interesting subject. The Economist magazine just had an article saying how much longer are baby boomers going to oppress the millennials. And they weren't just talking about the United States. They were talking about much of the world. So it's an interesting question. As long as I oppress my two children, I don't care. But no. But the demographics are changing very dramatically. It's interesting. Yes. From Alaska, very, very few, very, very few. That's a very difficult thing to do. So I don't think. And the other problem is we don't really have any large communities that are. I mean, southeast communities are close to Canada, but it's hard to access Canada unless you live in Hyder. I don't think that many, but I don't know for a fact. Those are federal regs, but I don't think it's very much. I don't think we get much exchange in the labor market. The labor market we get the most exchanges is in mining, because of course the Canadians are big miners. Did I see another hand over here? No? Yes, in the back. Right. Right. It'll be interesting, and now I'll be able to look up employment. As far as, well, cash we will have a good number for because it's taxed. You know, that's the one beautiful thing about a tax. Like you have sales taxes in Palmer and Wasilla. So I can see how much, and I use that as an indicator too. In Anchorage, I have absolutely no idea how much is sold. So actually there will be some very good statistics for that industry. What it's going to look like, I don't know. Our laws are a little bit different. Colorado, we get a lot of tourists here, but Colorado gets way more tourists than we do. They were the first. I don't know. I'm just really waiting to see what happens there, because I think guessing for me, I just can't. I don't know. Yes. Yeah, you can just email me, and I can just send you the slides. I think the Frontiersman is going to have these slides on their website. I already sent them the slides. You can just send me an email. It's neal.fried or fried, F-R-I-E-D, at alaska.gov, or you can just Google me and you'll find my email address. But I believe the Frontiersman will have those slides up. And I can also send them to the university as well. I'll take out all the incriminating stuff like pickups, but. Well, they already have it, actually. Yes. That's a good question. Right, right. I think the housing market could react pretty quickly. In fact, I went to a presentation, well, I presented there, and then they had a housing expert or a realtor talk about the local real estate numbers in Anchorage, sales numbers, and our overall numbers were, I think, up a little bit in 2015, but they were already dropping off that last quarter. So I think they can act. That's why we watch those numbers fairly closely. I have to say this, however, is our housing market, the environment of our housing market today is dramatically different than what it was in the 1980s. When we had built houses that no one ever even lived in and didn't live in for 5 to 10 years. I mean, we were so much further ahead of ourselves. We've been building actually very few. Our housing stock has been growing actually quite slowly in the last decade.
And in the 80s, the interest rate was 11.7%.
And that was probably subsidized by HFC as well, right? Mine was, but it was still 8 or 9 or 10 or 11%. Yes. You know, and that's of such a legitimate question with no legitimate answer. We have a much broader economy, a much wider economy, where we capture a lot more of the economic activity that takes place. But I don't know if our economy is that much more, it is definitely more diverse, but I don't think it's that much dramatically. I mean, we still are the most oil, even though we are not anywhere even close to being the largest oil producer in the country, we are more dependent on that industry than any other state in the United States. So we are more diverse, but it's really hard to measure a dramatic difference. I mean, there is some, because other industries have grown as well. Like fishing, believe it or not, has grown a lot. The visitor industry has grown a lot. The biggest change is we're doing a lot more of our own laundry nowadays than we used to. In other words, we're spending our money locally because we have restaurants and stores, and all those kinds of things. Healthcare. In the old days, very often we had to go somewhere for healthcare. We get it here now. So what does that mean? That's an interesting question. Yes. By growth, and you're making a very good point. By growth, I mean in the amount of people that are employed in that industry have grown. In the last 10 years, the amount of fish we've caught has grown and is very healthy. But you are not completely correct, but you are correct that a bigger and bigger share of the earnings from that industry has gone south. That is true. That is true. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Let me just say this, that the healthcare industry has grown every year in the last 30 years, except for in 1988, it stalled for 1 year. And that's when our population was relatively young, and we also lost a big part of our population, not a big part, but a significant number of people. With the aging, someone said, I like the term gray tsunami, and I can say because I'm part of it, we access so much more healthcare, and that sector or demographics is growing faster than any other. So in all of our longer-term occupational and industrial forecasts, healthcare continues to grow. We could be wrong. Maybe technology will change that. But that demographic is so very strong, it's hard to imagine a different scenario. Just because of that alone, it's so dramatic. Yes, I'll take two more. And I can hang around here and answer any other questions. Yes? I don't know what it is. But part of it could very well be that what you'd have to do, and it's very simple to do it, is you'd have to look at the age brackets of those age groups and see how fast they have grown. And you could do that. Because, what's interesting, and that's really important, and it's, marketing people look at this stuff in great detail. Just because your overall population is either growing or declining, in the details, it can be, some parts can be growing very rapidly while other parts are actually declining, like school enrollment. School enrollment has declined in Anchorage in the last 15 years, but population has continued to grow. It's just that segment of the population between, you know, kindergarten, well, somewhere in that kindergarten to 12th grade, that population has declined. So I'd have to look at those numbers, and I don't know what they are. But it helps explain certain things. Why is Spinard, those of you who are familiar with Anchorage, why is Spinard Road it's much more boring than it used to be? Now, our police force claims it's because they've been doing such a great job. But no, it's because there are not nearly as many young people with lots of money having a lot of fun. We're old and boring, and the age, you know, that's had a probably much more significant effect on our social lives than police enforcement. And those are the kinds of things we see. Populations change. You see how your population is very different today, you know, just the mix of it, than it was back in the 1980s, and it's constantly changing. It's constantly changing, and it's a fun thing. And if you're in business or elsewhere where age matters, you watch those numbers very closely. I guarantee you radio stations watch those numbers very closely. That's why they continue to play all that crappy old rock and roll, because they know there's still all those baby boomers out there. And they know that a lot of their kids are not listening to the radio. They've got their podcasts and everything else. Any other question? Well, last question, then I'll just hang out here for a while if anyone has, you know, personal questions you don't want to. No, I don't know. All right, well, thanks a lot. It was great, wonderful.
If you could wait just 1 second, I'd like to present Mr. Fried with a special memento from this wonderful lecture.
Thank you. A trophy.